What do you get when you combine a cup of music, a teaspoon of stories, and a dash of culture and tradition? Mucho Radio, the new recipe for radio.
This is Mucho African Radio. I'm your host, Nicole Johnson, and thank you for tuning in today from wherever you're listening in from. It is my pleasure to share a very special guest that's coming up on our show, absolutely for your listening pleasure. On Mucho Radio, we definitely get into African descent stories, telling it our way. If you have a story about your community or your lived experiences, let us know. Send it in by MuchoRadio@gmail.com.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this program, and I believe we've worked together before, and this was in Halifax during the National Black Canadian Summit in 2022, so it's good to have you in our space here in Ottawa at the Michael Jean Foundation. Now, I'm now serving as the executive director of the foundation after being director of programs for the last 3 years. I'm actually from Halifax. I moved to Ottawa from Halifax. So Halifax is my home in Canada. To have had the summit in Halifax in 2022 was something I was very proud about. You know, it's almost like bringing something home. And the work we do here is basically to feature black communities across Canada, especially in this decade of people of African descent. We've been using the summit as one of those occasions where we bring people of all ages, sectors, and gender, and so on, from black communities to come together and discuss issues that have impact on our lives, and also be able to propose strategies and solutions moving forward. Now, the Michael Jean Foundation works at the intersection of youth, social justice, and the arts and entrepreneurship, / innovation. So we always encourage or create space to allow the youth to be able to freely express themselves, because we believe that they have something to say, and we believe that we can learn from what the youth have to contribute. And we came to realize that the arts is one of the best way. You know, many of these youth actually express their thoughts and their aspirations. So that's what we've been able to explore the medium to make sure that their voices have been amplified. Many people probably know the foundation based on programs such as Power of the Arts and Fourth Wall, and Making the Invisible Visible, and a few other in the bursaries and so on entrepreneurship and art and so on. But since 2015, when United Nations declared the international a decade for people of African descent. As you know, we were asked by youth, basically, young artists and so on. If you already have, and they said to Madame, if you already have the ability to bring people together, why not, now that we have a decade to ourselves, why not bring communities, black communities, across Canada, from across Canada together, so we can actually serious discussions, you know, to be able to also talk about solutions and so on. So that's where it started. You know, it was became a love affair with between the Michel Jean Foundation and the Black community in Canada. So as you know, we had the first summit in 2017 in Toronto, second summit in Ottawa in 2019, and because of COVID, we end up having a virtual series, you know, throughout 2021, until we got to Halifax. We had another in-person summit, which was very successful, and over 1,200 delegates, and you know, almost 500 of those were young people, and they were very motivated, engaged, and their participation was very high. Now, as you know, we had an emotional we had many performances and speeches and workshops and roundtables and so on. All sectors were represented, you know, so it was like a celebration, but at the same time, a reunion, a family affair, and a place where people went to draw energy. You know, from where they could draw energy and be able to go back to their own community and said, I've been fed. Now I'm ready to fight. Let's continue this this battle. No, so it was a very inspiring moment. No, and I think, I don't know if you remember, even the last day when the Halifax Declaration was being pronounced, I always said to people that, I don't cry much, but if I didn't keep my eyes closed, I could have cried out of emotion, because there were a lot of emotions going throughout the room and so on. When you see the Halifax Declaration, not pronounced, not spoken, but also performed, you know, through dance, drumming, and singing and so on. So it was done in African style, you know. So me being an artist, that was, it impacted me. And I've spoken to many people who attended the summit who actually have now recovered from the emotional impact, you know, they experienced at the summit. So we know that history is in the making, you know, and the summit has become not just an event, but a movement, as Madame Jean would put it. The other thing that came out of the Halifax summit was a legacy project. We made a promise to ourselves and also to the government of Nova Scotia that where we have so many young people coming to the summit from all over the country, especially in Nova Scotia, we need to have a legacy project. So as soon as the summit was over, we said to ourselves, okay, how do we amplify the aspirations of young people using what just happened? So that way this movement continues and the buzz continues. And then we came to realize, wait a minute, we have the Halifax Declaration. The Halifax Declaration cannot go to sleep. No, we have to keep it alive. How do we keep it alive? Where? We keep it alive through the youth. We came up with a project called Power of the Youth, Jeunesse au Pouvoir, which allows us to be able to access funds through partners and so on to be able to fund, to provide grants to young people across the country, young black individuals and organization across the country who were interested in conceptualizing, planning, and executing projects in their own communities that are aligned to issues of the declaration. Issues addressed in the declaration, and also be able to propose solutions as they execute the project. So it's amazing that for the first cohorts, we're able to find across Canada, we're able to find about 33 projects. You know, each project received $5,000. And it's amazing what young people have been able to do, you know, with $5,000. And we've seen projects from almost every sector, you know, STEM, arts, justice, and, you know, name it, you know, health, you know, mental health. And so then you begin to ask yourself, wait a minute, these are young people. You know, where are they coming out with these ideas? So it just goes to confirm what we already think here at the foundation, that this line people use, that young people are the future. We don't believe in that. Well, at least I don't. You know, I actually believe that young people are for today, and we just have to give them room at a table. You know, that we have to involve them in our discussions. When we're looking for solutions, we're gonna have. We have to be intentional in bringing them to the table. You know, will they make mistakes? Yes, we have all made them, but they have to actually be at the table to be able to contribute. So it's been quite enlightening to see some of the project they proposed and they have actually executed. Now we have we can't really talk about it yet, you know, and what the source is, but we may be able to access some resources to fund probably another 25 projects. Now, but that's not public yet. That's where we are right now. So, you know, we see really things happening, you know, around the country, you know, in the communities and so on, with efforts, you know, by young people. The next summit is in Montreal. So things are coming together. Hotels have been selected, and the summit will be at the Palais des Congrès in Montreal on September 6 to 8 of 2024. We should be able to have some discounts in terms of travel as well. You know, like we had in Halifax. You know, so we'll be looking into those kind of negotiations very soon. Now, one thing about Montreal is that we'll make sure that the summit in Montreal has a taste of Montreal. So we are relying on the community, the black community in Montreal, Francophone and Anglophone, to help us with the exercise, you know, Donner un goût montréalais au sommet. With that, we also have added another aspect to the summit, whereas in Halifax we had some sessions that were for young people, maybe one or two, and some of them were involved in the overall summit in one aspect or another, either through performance or moderating a session here and there. This time we decided that we actually used the first day, the whole day, as a youth forum. So by youth for youth. So we have a group of young people who are actually planning this forum. So it's almost like a mini summit within a summit. No, but now we won't stop there. The youth will be very visible throughout the summit, now that the rest of the weekend. However, we want to make sure that we give them the, you know, their own day, you know, where they can celebrate their own accomplishments. They can talk about issues that are dear to them, and also they can talk about solutions and so on. One thing we know for sure, that all those community projects we funded will be funded, you know, by the time we have the summit, they will be featured at the forum. So that way those people come and share what they learned, you know, the skills they acquired and the solution they brought about to those issues, and also just the whole experience of, you know, leading something and contributing to their own communities, with, of course, with some mentorship from organizations from the from the same communities and so on. But I think it's young people learning from young people, you know. And of course, the forum is open to everyone. You know, anyone can attend. And it would be nice to have some people who are older to attend the forum to hear what the young people are saying. But it would be planned and led by youth. So. And then, of course, going into the Friday evening, there will be an opening ceremony, and then more workshops on Saturday. Most of the day on Saturday, there will be workshops and other festivities around the summit. And then on Sunday, we'll close everything with a number of activities as well, such as final keynotes, speeches, and maybe some artistic demonstrations and so on. But we believe that Montreal will be a big deal. You know, not only because the city is what it is, you know, but because we are bringing many communities together, especially in Montreal, Anglophone communities and Francophone communities, Black communities, but also, you know, what's special about Montreal is that it's the last year of the decade. So we will also have the, you know, the honor of welcoming international delegates, for instance. You know, from what we understand, we will have the office of the permanent permanent forum. The whole office is supposed to be in Montreal. From what I understand, there's some talks about requesting a second decade. Yeah, so because I think the first decade was just to start the work. My relationship with culture is that your culture is what, in a way, gives you identity, a certain a level of identity, because you can have identity based on religion, you can have identity based on geography, but I think culture is a big part of it, because culture does include also languages and so on. And if you really want to understand people and understand what they're all about, learn the language, you know. So, and that usually includes culture and so on. For me, culture is important because it defines the person. Culture takes you to the core of who you are. And I think that's what's important, to always make sure that our children, our young ones, you know, they understand the value of culture and they understand what their culture is, because when things really get complicated, sometimes the only thing that sustains you is what you have inside you, the core, you know, what gets you going. And sometimes it's the foundation of your own culture, the strength you draw from that culture, because that's not to be neglected, you know. And that's what makes us a bit different, you know, from everyone else. But that's also, it's something that allows us to be able to contribute to society. You know, imagine if everyone was like me, it would be a boring world. So you need the difference. I always say that God and dumb, you know, he made us all different so we can complete each other. To be in diaspora means that all, you know, at least the African diaspora, all people have some kind of linkage, some kind of ties, some ties to the continent, the motherland, either, it doesn't matter the years, you know, either through race, either through place of birth, or either through origin, you know. And to me, the reason why the diaspora is important, you know, is because there are forces out there systematically and strategically and intentionally sometimes put in motion to keep us divided. When I arrived in Nova Scotia, in some of the circles where I traveled, people tell me, "Oh, you from Congo? Oh yeah, okay. You're different from those other guys." I say, "What guys? Those guys from North Preston." I say, "What do you mean different? If I didn't open my mouth, would you know?" Then they go quiet. You know, I say, "I'm not that different, you know, because you probably treat me the same way if I didn't open my mouth and you didn't hear my accent. So don't say that to me anymore, you know, because we have the same struggle with those people you're telling me who are different from me. You know, they just happen to be in a different geographical area, you know, from where I grew up, you know, or from where I was born." So we always have to make the effort to find ways to come back, to come together, because only in the unity that we will be able to challenge some of those forces that tend to minimize the fact that we all have Africa as the motherland. I know young people and older people who are African Nova Scotians, you know, born in Nova Scotia, from the black community in Nova Scotia, who have gone to Africa. When they came back, they were never the same. Why? There's a reason. They were never the same. You know, and I know who they are. I know, I've asked them. Now, I have not been back for a while. They actually had the privilege to go back. You know, I have not been back, but I know, you know, that when they came back, I asked them, "How do you feel?" They were never the same. There's a reason. So if we can have more programs like that, that would take young people. I know Wayne Hamilton is being a champion in with that kind of program. I wish we could have more resources to keep doing that, because I think it's crucial that those young people who are not born in the continent to spend time in the continent, because it's transformational. In terms of how you think, how you feel about yourself, and even the complex people have, you know, that could actually be affected positively. So we have to intentionally look for those ways that bring us together. You know, we can no longer think. I think we were having a conversation earlier. It's too risky not to think in terms of diaspora, especially today. You know, it's too risky, because there are too many people out there who are afraid, you know, that the only way to deal with their fear is to divide others. I don't want to be specific, but to divide others. That's the only way they can deal with their fear. So we have to understand the phenomenon and say to ourselves, no, we're not going to accept that. I think we accepted it long enough. Even during slavery, you know, black people were being divided. You know, certain ones were more important than the other ones, and so on. In Africa, it happened all the time. Sometimes because the colonizer's religion was Catholic, so a Catholic person was more important than a Protestant person, and so on. Like, you know, tribal divisions. So the colonizers who favor one tribe over the other tribe, you know, and creating those divisions on purpose in order to for their own advantages. And so we know that's happening, and if we're not awake enough to understand that that's happening and it's not actually doing us any good to accept those conditions, then it's our fault. I'm a big supporter of the mentality that says that we need to value our African diaspora before we look elsewhere. I think to have a radio that's African, or let's say black, a black radio in such a way that it's actually focused, you know, because sometimes when you hear black radio, you know, some people may think, are you talking about R&B? What are you talking about? So here in North America, when you hear black radio, sometimes you think that they're actually talking about R&B and that kind of music, right? You know, which is mostly North American. But I think you want to have a black radio that's all-encompassing, and which actually promotes the diaspora. And that's why I was saying earlier that even when I had my band, I made sure that many parts of the world, you know, are where the black people have lived or continue to live to this way represented, you know, as much as possible, you know, we're represented in the group, from the dancers to the musicians, you know, and so on. And, you know, and that was intentionally done. That's why I called it Afro Musica, because it was kind of uniting people. Even though, as the leader, a lot of the sounds were, in many ways, the music many times sound like Congolese music, you know. But it was, the way it was played was more internationally diaspora. Yeah. So if you go into my last CD, you'll hear reggae, you'll hear zouk, you'll hear soukous, you'll hear salsa, you'll hear, you know, so everything is in there. You'll hear bossa nova, you know, everything is in there. It's not by accident my pianist was always Cuban. You know, it was intentional, you know. So, and then you had a guitarist from Guyana. Then you had a drummer from Antigua. Then you had a bass player from Nova Scotia, the black community in Nova Scotia, you know. So so all that was done intentionally. And then you had a guitarist from Congo, for instance, you know, because I thought that, imagine those people learning African music together, teaching each other and so on. You know, I remember the first time I recruited new musicians, and then one of the new musicians was actually a bass player. You know, he since died. You know, Leo. You know, he was a cool guy. You know, so first concert, he was so excited that he was playing African music. You know, because he only played funk at the time. You know, he played in the same band with the people like Lou Gannon and Wayne Hamilton. They were playing funk and that kind of music in your days. And here he was playing African music. He was so excited. You know, at the end of the concert, you know, he said, "I changed my name." I said, "To what?" He said, "Burkina Faso." I said, "Burkina Faso, do you know what Burkina Faso is?" I said, "I heard it was a country somewhere." So, and he was with us until he died, you know, at least until I stopped the band, you know, and then moved to Ottawa and so on. So, so which means that the music affected his life, you know, the way he saw himself, you know, the way he viewed himself. And they were singing, you know, this guy, you know, born in Guyana, singing Lingala. And so what that does, it means that we talked about culture and identity earlier, where that adds a lot to someone's culture, identity, and how they see themselves. You know, so that was just a little piece we contributed to the music mosaic in Canada. You know, it was just a parts we wanted to play, because a big part of what, you know, the reason I started the band, it was not for money. It was I was angry. I was frustrated that I came to Canada, I was 20 years old, and but you look at TV, you look everywhere, newspapers, the only time they talked about Africa, if there was something negative, like a war, famine, and so on. So I said, wait a minute, I grew up there. I don't, you know, I was fine. You know, if my parents didn't move here, I'd probably still be there, you know. So it was very frustrating. So, you know, music became an outlet and a way of showing a little bit the beauty of Africa. Because up to that time was like a dark place, you know, like some place where you go to do adventures, you know, Tarzan and things like that and so on. And people didn't know that sometimes in some cities in Africa, when you're standing there, you think you're in New York, you know, but they're not told these things, you know, because somebody intentionally wanted to portray Africa a certain way. So the band was a response to that. You know, and one of the things I had decided also, you know, I may put European language here and there, French, English, Portuguese, Spanish, maybe a verse or a chorus and everything, but the bulk of the songs will be sung in African languages. I'm in love with the idea of seeing youth develop. You know, I'm in love with the idea of seeing youth actualized, feel actualized when they're happy, now that they're accomplishing things, they have space, you know, to express themselves. That is usually my happy place, you know, like I sit like I'm already in heaven, you know. So, and everything I do, and you look at my background, you see that youth have always been part of my work. No, even with ANSMA, you know, I always made sure to push the youth. Asia was a youth. You know, Asia Nugroove, you know, she was a youth at one time. We pushed her. She actually sang in my CD when she was a youth. You know, so because that, I believe that, we are creating a better world when we are properly guiding our youth. Quand on les encadre. Parfaitement là, we are doing something to this world that we don't even know, we don't even understand, you know, the impact. You know. So, and the other, so I like to leave a legacy that continues to place the youth in an environment where they can really contribute to society, whether it's in social justice activities, whether in arts, whether it be in entrepreneurship, innovation, and so on. Those are the things I like to make sure that, okay, when I leave this position, say, okay, this was done. No, we did this, and now we got this done. And that's why we have programs like Power Youth, because when you can affect almost 60 youth at the same time of different parts of the country, you know, that's a big deal. You know, so the other, the flip side for that is just making sure that the idea of bringing communities together, especially through the summits, or it could be other activities, that it become something that just happens organically for Black communities in Canada. And through what we do, we can affect what also happens in the diaspora, influencing other communities around the world. We like to be able to share the Halifax Declaration with other communities around the world so they can actually use that as a model. Now, the other thing is that because this is the Michael Jean Foundation we are talking about, I like to be able to also do as much work as possible, even though we really busy with the summit and busy with some of the projects that come out at the summit and some of the old programs we've done in the past. We'll continue to do those. But as we engage in this projects and programs and so on, I want to make sure that other communities are not left behind, such as the indigenous community. We want to make sure that we're doing some work in those communities with the youth and so on, and LGBTQ communities and so on, all those communities, you know, Muslim communities and immigrant communities and so on, all those communities that feel underserved for one reason or another, you know, want to make sure that we are paying attention to them, you know, and we are making sure that they are heard, they receive services that will allow them to also develop the same way we are doing it with the Black youth. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, you are listening to Mutual African Radio. We want to thank you for listening in and tuning in.